I've been going through Bhikkhu Bodhi's, mainly his introduction and his use of the commentaries in explaining the Paticca-samuppada, and I've been reading on the internet where a particular teacher or a number of teachers seem to indicate that the round can be broken at feeling. And sometimes I seem to get the indication from other people that that is not so, that that's a misunderstanding. So, I guess I just wanted a little bit of guidance in that area.
But how can one stop feeling to arise?
No, we can't stop feeling to arise. It's not controllable. There's no person to control it. But these are very famous teachers that...
We have to consider the word we hear. Otherwise, we'll have wrong understanding because it's impossible to stop feeling to arise.
Am I right? They don't talk about stopping feeling arising. They talk about somehow influencing the feeling that arises. Would that be right, Christine?
Not reacting to the feeling?
Yes, I think it's not reacting. It seems to be at that point when feeling arises that there's some form of choice. They seem to imply there's some form of choice where you can... perhaps weaken, I don't know if weaken's the right word, but in your, don't have the words, you can alter or...
At that very moment, is there any level of understanding about feeling or the characteristic of feeling right then? Otherwise it's useless. Just talk about rather than the understanding of feeling at that very moment. It indicates that there is no awareness of feeling at all.
Is it if there is awareness of the feeling as it arises and there's no reaction to the feeling, then no more sankharas happen because of this?
It's the one who acts, but not the one who understands.
But if...
Even right now, if we try any reaction, who is doing so?
Yes, of course there would be self. But if there's, if only awareness arising, isn't that where the dependent co-origination happens, is at the Vedana?
What we have learned from life to life, it helps or condition the understanding of reality at that moment when awareness is aware. Otherwise, it just arises and goes away all the time. But by the accumulation of understanding, whenever awareness arises, it assists the understanding to understand.
So is there any other place other than at Vedana where the chain can be broken?
Yes, by understanding only. At that very moment as well, not after or before.
But wouldn't it be a different moment, a different place wouldn't it be another sankhara that has now arisen and then again the feeling in the Vedana comes, and so then that would be the place where it would be broken?
Right now, can there be the understanding of reality,
yes,
which is conditioned by having awareness, or by awareness itself when it arises, and Panya knows or understands then, at that very moment only. So it's not a matter of trying to change at all, because at that moment there is no understanding, and it shows that there is no awareness either.
Is it possible you're talking about like when sometimes a sense door process occurs, and sometimes it doesn't go through the whole entire process? Is that what you're talking about?
No.
No?
No. Maybe an emotion that comes up, maybe anger.
Yeah.
And then as we react to the emotion and begin to feed it, then it becomes more, and it becomes another sankhara, and another sankhara, and another sankhara.
Yeah.
And always in the moment when the feeling comes, if awareness is aware in that moment, isn't it, then it's finished, because awareness is the change, is where it changes, yeah?
awareness arises and falls like other reality. Even right now, seeing arises and falls away, many processes, and then hearing and thinking. It keeps on going like this. But can there be moment with awareness right now? When? And who knows? Yes. But the person who is aware at that very moment, awareness arises and it is aware. So right understanding can see the difference between moment without awareness and moment with awareness. Very naturally, exactly the same right now. No change at all. No self who is trying to do or to induce sati or awareness to arise. Say that as soon as reality appears, awareness is there whenever awareness arises. So there is no one who's trying to do anything impossible. Because as soon as reality appears, awareness is there whenever it arises. So close, very close.
But can we say, to take Shakti's example of a strong emotion, that to have awareness of that strong emotion would be productive?
In order to eradicate the idea of self completely, absolutely, permanently, there must be the understanding of any reality which one takes for self.
Including the emotion.
Every moment. Otherwise it's there, the self is there.
Another thing I was also wondering about was still having great difficulty with anatta.
Everyone, not just you.
That's a bit of a relief. But accepting anatta, how is it possible where there is no self to develop something like compassion for others if there's no self?
As long as the idea of self, the mitchatiti, hasn't been eradicated, it's impossible to take the self out or away.
I didn't understand what you were saying.
At this moment, the kusala citta arises, but can there be the idea of self later, after kusala citta has fallen away? Because the mitchatiti or the wrong view hasn't been eradicated yet.
I think Christine's question is, how can there be compassion if there is no self?
So you mean that there is nothing?
So you mean that there is nothing? Yeah, but Christine, every emotion, everything that arises is all either, it's jitas and jetasikas and rupa, okay? It's not a self being compassionate, it's compassion arising, compassion jetasika arising.
We talk about developing. Who develops? Developing compassion, developing panya. Who develops?
Okay, all right, this is like John was saying yesterday. Okay, there's no who developing. In other words, it's everything conditioning. Once it happens, it conditions for it to happen again. So say compassion arose. The jetasika that is compassion arose. And that conditions, it creates a condition for it to arise again. This has always been my question. Just having that happen, one sense door process, let's say, would that be enough? Just one sense door process, would that be enough? And one mind door process, would that be enough for the awareness of the arising of compassion? Or would there need to be like many sense door processes occurring like within the space of that, many sense door processes arising with and mind door process to be aware of compassion, say for the dog on the street?
The question is, whether can I know? I for everyone?
Yes, yeah, still an I, an awareness sure. of...
Yeah, but you yeah. see that it's impossible to estimate or think that it should be like this or that. But right now, is there any understanding of reality yet?
I think what you're saying is if there can be some understanding of reality, it doesn't matter.
I think that it's not a matter of many rounds of processes have happened. Whenever there is awareness of a reality, no sense to count. But at this very moment, is there any understanding of reality as it is?
But on the other hand, it's natural to have kilesa, and it's natural to want to get rid of kilesa too, isn't it?
Panya and satta together, balanced. Panya and satta, or unbalanced.
As you've brought up the balanced panya and satta again, I have a follow-on question from yesterday. So we talk about balancing of these wholesome states, but we also said, okay, well, when it's referring to the panya, some people think they know more than they really do, like they've studied a lot of Abhidhamma or studied a lot of Pali and think they know a lot. And so you can see that too much panya and too little sadha, that was your example. But can we really, because it's not really panya, so why do we use the same word panya to refer to this? Just like if someone has a lot of blind faith, we say, oh, too much sadha, not enough panya, but how can we really refer to this as sadha?
There are many degrees or levels of panya, right? Like with Jonathan, he knows about the process. And the question is how it happened for sati to be aware while the processes keep on going. See, is that enough sadha? Or only the panya which knows about the processes and would like to know about reality when there is no satta of developing understanding of reality which appears?
What is satta? Well, in
faith. Faith.
Also faith.
In this case, then we'd say, well, there's a lot of maybe theoretical knowledge, but it's not real panya that really knows the realities. So we say, okay, too much panya, too little satta. But when it's just theoretical knowledge, well, okay, we could say maybe it's a level, but it's not really developed panya. So to me, when I read about this balancing of faculties, too much panya, not enough sadha, or too much sadha, not enough panya, it's a little bit, it seems misleading because it's not really developed panya.
That's why the teaching is very subtle. We have to be so very careful to study and really find out what is the truth of that word, like sadha and panya, and what level of panya, and how can there be panya less than sadha, see? But whenever there is awareness, it's the moment of balanced satta and panya and other indriya as well. But whenever there is no awareness yet, it's not I who's trying to balance it, but it's the sankhara cetasika.
Is it true, I mean this is just a technical detail, is it true after the third stage of insight they are balanced already?
Even the moment of being aware, it's balanced.
Balanced, okay. So any moment
and
of
so it
being
grows.
Aware, it's balanced, right? And also in some texts, like the Patisamvita Magga, they talk about balance of vipassana and samatha.
When it's vipassana jnana.
When it's vipassana jnana, then there's balance of vipassana and samatha.
Right. Together, they go together at the same level.
Right.
They appear balanced.
Balanced at that time.
Can we find too much panya? Is there such thing?
Yes.
I am just confused.
Well, exactly. This was exactly my question, because people often quote it from the Satipatthana Sutta or other texts which talk about balancing of faculties. And, you know, we read in the text, oh, if there's too much panya and too little sadha, it leads to craftiness. Or if there's too much sadha and not enough panya, it leads to blind faith, and too much energy, too little concentration leads to restlessness or something, or distraction. And it never quite made sense to me, because if we're talking about wholesome factors, how can there be too much?
Yeah.
But in the example yesterday, Khunsu Chin was saying an example of too much panya, too little sadha, as if, for example, someone has a lot of theoretical knowledge of Pali or Abhidhamma, a lot of detail, like knows all the details about the processes, but not enough confidence or real understanding in realities at the present moment. So this was an example, but because there are different levels of panya, but this is theoretical right understanding, but what she's saying is actually at a moment of awareness and moments of insight, they are balanced already. So when you read these parts in the text, it can be quite confusing. Maybe you could give a few more examples, like what would be an example of too much confidence and too little wisdom? How can there be too much confidence? How can there be a lot of confidence if there isn't enough wisdom?
I've come across the passage in Dipitaka or Attakatha, the commentary, about those who have strong satta would say that even the Buddha's body is Lokuttara. Because the body cannot be Lokuttara at all.
But I think that
when we read the Tipitaka, we can consider the everyday events to understand that it is what? Satta stronger or Panya stronger in daily life?
That example would seem to be more an example of ignorance or wrong view than of Satta to me.
See that the person who has strong satta will sot mon, chant all day and all night, see, praising the Buddha's virtues, but no understanding.
I suppose you could say that's why the satta becomes tainted with the wrong view and the other kilesas, because like some of the monks who prostrate their way all the way to Bodh Gaya or something, it's motivated out of respect for the Dhamma or the Buddha, but then it's tainted by the wrong view.
Could one say that those are examples of sila bhatta paramasa, or just clinging to the ritual, or because there's no real understanding?
When we talk about sila bhatta paramasa, it's the person who would like to attain enlightenment with wrong practice. But in daily life, we can see many people who do everything so strange, like pay homage to the banana tree or something like that. If there is no understanding at all, it's not that they'd like to pay homage in order to become enlightened. But since they still have ignorance and wrong view, so they do everything which is nonsense.
So in the first, okay, sila bhatta paramasa is when they'd like to do something to become enlightened. So an example is if they have the idea that if they chant all day or night that this will help them become enlightened, or if they, yes, prostrate all the way to Bodh Gaya. So wouldn't this be an example?
At the moment when they're doing like that, whether they just pay homage, no idea that that will bring about the understanding or the enlightenment at all.
They might just be told that that's the way it's done or something like that, and they might be following someone else's example, not necessarily thinking that they're
from
developing understanding. I just wanted to get back to the earlier discussion about particular kilesa. In the Dhamma, one of the things we learn a lot about is attachment and aversion and ignorance, and we learn how destructive and harmful these things are. So when it comes to the development of understanding and awareness, then it's natural, I think, that there should be the tendency to look at these particular factors as perhaps being more the object of awareness than something like seeing or visible object. And of course, it's partly motivated by desire to have less agusala, which itself is unwholesome, I suppose. But do you think that it's actually wrong to want to have more awareness of unwholesome tendencies?
Yes. That was easy. Because
that's not the path leading to having more understanding. Just clinging and more clinging.
So what are the conditions for having more understanding then?
Just developing understanding of reality right now.
The reality right now might be strong aversion, strong emotion.
It's a dipatthana, object of right understanding and awareness.
But it's difficult not to choose an object at those times, isn't it?
Anyone choose a wrong idea, wrong view, which thinks that I can.
Right. But then there is choosing. I mean, that's also another reality.
Nama.
Right. So there could be awareness of the choosing or the wishing for the
it's
object.
It's the self.
Right. So awareness of idea of self.
The self is trying to choose.
Right. But there can be awareness of any reality.
At that moment, yeah. It's not awareness.
Right.
Just one moment at a time.
But it's the object that's presently appearing that can be the object of awareness. At those moments...
Otherwise, it must be avijja, which follows the right. Seeing or
right.
Hearing.
And one can say at those moments that there is seeing invisible object happening as usual. But the fact is that the realities that are the object of one's attention are the kilesas that are appearing. So one doesn't deny that reality at the moment, the strong emotion that is... appearing.
We study Dhamma, we just learn to understand more about Dhamma which appears to not the idea of other things else, like can we try or can we select, can we choose.
Right. So perhaps we could say possibly that there's a tendency of thinking of awareness as a remedy for these
so
particular...
So usual as long as there is not enough understanding of reality which appears. Mm. Even the panya grows when it's not completely eradicated, I mean the wrong understanding of michatiti yet, then there can be condition for thinking, very, very fantasy thoughts.
So what about at the moments when there's no strong emotion or particular agusala and it's just ordinary, everyday?
Mm-hmm.
Are there any thoughts of awareness at those
this
moments?
This is one way to eliminate attachment of the self, which try very hard to get the result, like having more panya or sati, right? The
yes,
way we are
yes.
talking about
yes,
can
yes.
lessen the idea
yes.
of clinging.
So I think one of the problems is that somehow there's the idea that awareness can help to resolve these difficult situations, but we don't think about awareness at the other times, like the ordinary moments when there are no problems, no strong kilesa, and we're just living ordinary life.
When there is still the idea of self, when there is no awareness of the object which appears right now, it goes away from that moment to other things like idea about it. So one can see the difference between the moment of being aware and moment without awareness, that awareness is there. Whenever any object appears, awareness is already there when it arises, different from the moment of turning away and thinking about other things, not being aware, not study the reality which appears with understanding. So we can see the very subtle point. How can there be idea all the time in a day? Because there is no awareness of a characteristic of reality.
Right.
So just when awareness is aware, it doesn't go away or turn away from the characteristic of reality, that is moment of understanding and awareness.
Do something about it. It's clinging to self at those times that is the reality rather than the emotion. And clinging to self is a condition for a lot more.
And no one can help, because most people would like to have awareness right then,
yes.
when there's strong emotion.
Yes.
But how can it be like that? Because all dhammas are anatta. So whenever awareness arises, panya is there, which knows that it is awareness, because it is aware of a reality, a characteristic of a reality.
In fact, could we say if there was more awareness developed at ordinary moments, then there'd be better conditions for awareness at times of strong emotion too.
Clinging. It goes along all the way.
Cannot engineer the conditions.
Until panya sees attachment as attachment, not self.
So what kind of reminders then can there be if it's all wanting to have more awareness? If one doesn't reflect on things and give oneself reminders in daily life, then there'd never be any awareness anyway. So how does one distinguish between useful reminders and wanting to have more awareness?
To understand that these are the words for having more attachment or less attachment.
Can you give an example?
Right now.
Yeah.
No one tell anyone to be aware because
right.
it's impossible.
Right.
But to understand that reality appears all day, all night, but there is no awareness. So it's the, not the matter that we are trying to have such and such reality, to have less not strong emotion, like whenever it happens, but to develop the understanding. And we do not mind whether awareness arises or not, but there can be the development of understanding. And when there is awareness, the accumulated understanding will understand the characteristic of reality which appears as just a reality. Right now, visible object is just a reality. Listen more and more and more until there are conditions for awareness to arise and there is right understanding that it's only a reality which can appear only when it touches the I base and it fall away very fast. This will reduce the attachment to wanting to concentrate on it. Because it's not the matter of concentration. It's not the object of concentration, but only awareness is aware of different characteristics, one at a time. So one can understand that there is no one at all, nothing, only different characteristics of different realities in life.
What significance does Pakatupadnisayapachaya have in all this?
To know that this morning cannot be conditioned by anyone, like some creator or things like that, but it's conditioned by the previous accumulation.
What I understand from Pakatupadnisayapachaya is that there are certain conditions that can condition other states. So I'm thinking in terms of, for some people, certain situations, I mean certain states can be more conditioned for sati, while others will be different.
Who knows the accumulation of each person? Even oneself.
But for some people, at some point, say strong emotions could be conditioned for satya.
So, it's for that person.
But would it be okay to think that in general, if it's that all the time, then it's quite unlikely that it's satya because it's quite odd that a person will only be thinking, having sati when that person is having strong emotions.
What's the use of thinking about the others? Because once the person himself cannot know either about his own accumulation enough.
Someone may think, oh, it's only because they had this major trauma in their life or these strong emotions that they are listening to Dharma, but I think all one can say is the conditions are so complex we can never pinpoint just what is.
As much as one can do is helping the others to understand the teachings and realities which appear. One has to develop one's own understanding of one's own accumulation on one's own world.
Even thinking about others is conditioned.
Why? Just thinking?
No, I mean, some people just happen to want to help others.
Right now, do we have to thinking about each one's accumulation?
We don't have to, but it does happen. I mean, not in such a situation, but let's say...
No matter what situation.
It's only thinking, yes. I mean, when it comes to persons, it's only thinking. But still, there can be conditions for kusala, and...
Yes, we cannot really know the accumulation of anyone, or even oneself.
I'm not sure if this ties in with what we're talking about now, but... last night and this morning, Sandra and I were talking about intention. And there's so much talk in the West about setting intention, getting up in the morning and setting intention. And if I can just read a little bit from this magazine that Sandra has. It says, setting intention, at least according to Buddhist teachings, is quite different than goal making. It is not oriented toward a future outcome. Instead, it is a path of practice that is focused on how you are being in the present moment. Your attention is on the ever-present now, in the constantly changing flow of life. You set your intention based on understanding what matters most to you and make a commitment to align your worldly actions with your inner values. Would you comment?
The problem, I think, is making the commitment. There's still, I think a John would say, that there's still a self, making a commitment instead of saying that that would then set the conditions for such an intention to arise.
I know that the Tibetan Buddhists in particular are always making their wishes. They call intention, you know, I wish for peace and happiness in the future. I wish for health and awareness to develop. And so I'm wondering if when they do that, if the intent is to begin to somehow set the wheel in motion for some accumulation to begin.
What you're asking is that, is if one makes a wish, such as the Tibetan Buddhist does, would that be act as conditions for such an intention as jetasikas to arise?
That was possibly what I was trying to say before, when I was saying how, you know, we're told we should develop this or that quality, or we, that's almost the same as setting an intention. And again, you come back to the fact, who is it that's developing? Who is it that's intending? Is it possible? But I do hear Ajahn saying we should develop such and such, so I'm right. A bit confused there.
There's a difference between what we refer to as sati, or awareness, in Buddhism, and what is referred to as awareness in other teaching. So in Buddhism, awareness can only be aware of an absolute reality. So at the moment of seeing this visible object, that which is seen, there's no Sandra, no Kunsuchin, no person. Or if there can be awareness of hardness at the moment of touching the table, but there can't be awareness of knee or bending or sitting in a lotus, because this is just an idea that there is. So I think that to understand anything about awareness or intention, there has to be an understanding about what this moment is. So maybe you can say a little more about what you understand this moment to be, Sandra.
I don't even understand what you mean by this moment.
The article extract that
right.
It talks about intending to be aware in this moment.
In this moment.
So but what does it mean? About
what did that mean to me?
Yes. What do you understand by it?
That would be at any particular moment. So that, for example, when I read that, at that particular moment, I was aware that I didn't understand what that phrase meant. I would first say one can be aware of feelings, one can be aware of thoughts, one can be aware of sensation, one can be aware of perception. All of those would be, I mean, depending on what is in the moment.
We may have the intention to be happy as we intend to get something or grasp at something, and at the same time, the person who may be grasping for something that may be bad, to steal, to kill, they also may be thinking that the intention that they have to get or to rob is also good. So it seems almost like there's a fine line between intention and the grasping and the clinging to something.
It seems good, but is there any understanding? Mm. The most important thing is to understand. Because if one thinks that I intend to be aware, any understanding?
No.
Not at all. So if that person is trying to be aware, because he said that I will be aware, is there any understanding? Whenever one thinks that one is aware, for example, I can say, be aware, and everyone is aware, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is that awareness? Or is that just common experience of a reality like a hardness? Let's be aware. So at that moment, any understanding of hardness, or just know that there is awareness, like usual, just know that it's hard, just know that it's green, just know that it's sound, just know that it's this and that. Is that awareness? With panya? No, not at all. So it depends, no matter what word we use, whether we understand reality of that word, like awareness. What is the exact reality of awareness? It's not an ordinary experiencing any object. Like we used to say, I am aware that it's hard, I am aware that it's soft, or I am be aware of whisper object. That is not the characteristic of awareness which is wholesome. And that cannot be panya with just the idea of I am aware now, but no understanding of the object at all.
So what is the characteristic of sati? Is it panya?
No.
No, it's separate, of course.
Yes.
So what is the characteristic and then what is the characteristic?
Very difficult to explain in any language, I think, because sati arises with all wholesome moment, with all wholesome citta. Like now, when there is sata of hearing Dhamma, it's sati there with other wholesome jetasikas. At least in a moment of wholesome citta, there must be 19 jetasikas, 19 wholesome jetasikas, including sati. And who knows, even right now, at moment of seeing, there must be 7 jetasikas arising together. But can anyone tell about one's feeling at moment of seeing? Just that moment of seeing, the feeling there, when there is no awareness, or if now there can be awareness, is that awareness aware of feeling, or just visible object as visible object? So we learn about the realities that Buddha taught because he had enlightened, but everything is in darkness when it does not appear. For example, sati is in darkness, feeling is in darkness. Who knows? They arise and fall away in darkness. Only when awareness is aware, the characteristic of a reality appear, and it needs panya, which has listened a lot, to understand that there is no self. And this is one characteristic of a reality, just one characteristic of a reality. And at that moment, it needs no word to explain, because it appears as it is. For example, hardness. We do not have to use any word at all, because the characteristic of hardness appear. But in daily life, all realities appear. No understanding, no awareness. Only thinking about realities until awareness is aware, right then, we know that it's that we have heard before, that it's just a reality. It is a characteristic of a reality which can appear through a certain doorway. For example, visible object cannot appear through body sense or body base at all. Sound cannot appear through eye base. See, so we learn about the very subtle and mysterious reality that can be known exactly only when awareness arises and is aware with right understanding. it doesn't mean that there should be more and more awareness without understanding. But we shouldn't mind much about whether we'd like to have more sati. But what about the panya? For example, at this moment, we have heard a lot about visible object as a reality. It's so real because it's now appearing. What about the understanding of visible object as it is, as no one, nobody at all, just the reality which can appear? And this is the way to become less clinging to the idea of people and things when there is the memory about the shape and form. And we can see that how much ignorance is there only in a moment of experiencing an object. Like visible object appears now, no understanding, no exact or right understanding of the particular characteristic of that reality yet, only learning about it. And there is still the idea of I see people and thing in it all day, all time. But in reality, it's only thinking about the shape and form with memory or sanya perception. So one can understand that how the world goes so fast with avijja, no understanding, until we begin to listen, to develop understanding little by little, until it appears as it is, no one, no self. For example, citta, that reality which can experience an object. Is it dark? So dark. No shade, no form, no light. But the object is bright. The object appears as different color, while the citta which experiences it is so dark. See, without understanding, it's useless to read about awareness without understanding the characteristic of awareness as just a reality.
What's the significance of the light and dark? I mean, just to show the ignorance, how little is known?
Just to show the distinction between rupa and nama. The nama doesn't have any shape, form, smell, but it can experience. It sees now. No self, no me, who sees.
But rupa also, we are talking about visible object.
Just one.
What do we do then if we notice there is trying and a lot of trying to insert self into it?
Characteristic of reality.
So at that moment then the reality is the trying, and maybe if there's awareness there can be. So then you just keep saying, okay, there's trying, so it seems to be an endless, vicious sort of circle of...
It's not a wish, right? It's a reality.
It's a reality. But then attachment or wrong view comes in again, and one thinks, okay, I've seen that, so...
But only panya can know, see?
And that's already the development, when you recognize the wishing, the wanting, and that's already sati. What more do you want?
Is it?
On one level? No? No?
It can be. Depends. The kilesa might be quicker than the kusala. In that situation, the desire and the wrong view is so subtle and entrenched.
Whispering wish.
There's always a temptation to try to have sati, even when we are reminded that this moment is conditioned, still it's always trying. And I think the more you understand, the more you notice these moments. So there's nothing you can do in a way, but just keep noticing.
Maybe that's why it's better to start with a neutral object.
For me, again, the word practice comes up. Who practices? This is a big word. We have to practice, we practice, we practice. Can you talk about that?
That we better forget all those words.
Yeah, I think so. I like that idea.
So perhaps a better translation of patipat is development rather than than practice.
I don't know whether I can explain this, but according to Pali term, patipatti is Pali word. Patti is particular or special, and patti is to reach a particular reality. only awareness can reach the characteristic of a certain or particular reality.
That means just one reality?
Yes, at a time. Mm-hmm. That is the real meaning of patipatti. But for the Thai, they use this word for to do, to perform. So they think that they have to do something. But that is not the meaning of patipatti in Pali language.
Could you repeat?
Patipatti in Pali, patti, the second syllable, is to reach. And patti is particular, special, or only a characteristic at a time, a certain particular reality, to reach a certain particular reality.
I don't think it really makes any difference whether we use practice or develop or what word, if there is, while there is the idea of self-doing, whatever words are used, it's going to interpret them accordingly.
Absolutely.
So whatever translation one uses or whatever sutta one reads, one can read the whole Tipitaka with an idea of self-doing and performing and practicing. Like when before you mentioned when even Khunsu Chin says develop awareness, so people will understand it according to how they want to or how they're used to understanding it.
Even the word patipatti can be used in the same way.
So how do you understand the practice in English?
It's interesting. When I first came to practice, I was sitting with Goenka in India. It was my first Vipassana course, and having just come from the West, I was about 24 years old, and he kept saying, "Double up awareness." And this was via the talks at night, and for 10 days, I kept thinking, how can I double up my awareness? For it was like a koan to me. How can I double it? It was astonishing to me. So I went for 10 days with this in my mind, doubling it. I didn't even know how to develop it, never mind how I was going to double it. So for all these years, it's been a very interesting process.
Earlier, then Ajahn mentioned that chanting, I believe you said, people chant all day and believe that they do a good thing, and that's a kusala jit. But with the wrong view, how could it be kusala jit? Because I believe that by chanting, it can make you better or can create panya. But if that's the wrong view, how could it be kusala jit?
Different moments. When a person is chanting, that person might have the confidence in the Buddha's virtues, that very moment.
I was reading part of the website, I forgot which one, but they mentioned that don't believe in that all the teaching, even what the Buddha teaching, always have doubt. And I thought they said doubt the teaching until panya arise. Now my question is, if you keep doubting what you read or doubting the Buddha teaching or words, doubt is vichikicca, which is bad, which is kilesa. How could that lead into panya? I'm not quite sure. Is that just the wrong word to use the word doubt? Should we use it as if you listen to some teaching, you should try to understand, or you should try to continue listening until panya arise, but to use the word doubt, I'm hesitant to, right? Because doubt is, for me, it's like, I don't believe what you say until you're proven. But how could you prove that is a real teaching if you continue doubting his teaching? When we went to Cambodia a few years ago, and I noticed the people in Cambodian people, they seem to study and understand more or have more satta than a lot of us here in Thailand or in US. I think one's the reason they don't have doubt in Buddha teaching. They might don't understand all the thing, I don't have satipatthana yet, but they don't have doubt. So doubt, it's a very strong word to say that keep continue doubting the Buddha words or the teaching until panya arise. I'm very confused with that. Can Thanachan clarify that, please?
I was just going to say, one of the suttas that's continually quoted in the West all the time is the Kalama Sutta. I don't know what the real name of it is, but it's referred to as the Kalama Sutta. And it's often put forward as the Buddha saying that, that we are to doubt everything, even his word. But I don't think that was the actual intention of the sutta at the time. It was, he was talking to people who were not yet his disciples, and who were just saying, we don't know what to think, all these teachers are coming through all the time. And I think he was saying, not that it was good to doubt, but that it was...
You may well doubt.
You may well doubt. It was almost a natural thing to doubt, yeah. But it's really, that particular sutta is made so much of. It's almost like you were told, this is how to be.
Right. Ajahn, what would be the Pali word that they would have used in the Kalama Sutta? In the Kalama Sutta.
We followed this and I looked at the commentary, and so people translate it as you should doubt, but actually what it says is there may be doubt, there may be conditions for doubt. Oh. So it's a difference between you should doubt and there may be conditions for doubt. It's a word, kinsha, or something for doubt. Vichikicca and another one. There may be Vichikicca and Kincha. I think it would be useful if you say a little bit more, because I do think that for people it's difficult when they hear many different translations or interpretations, for example, the Mahanidana Sutta, and they don't know what to believe or follow. So I don't know if you can add more.
It's the teaching of Buddha. It's not just for reading, but for studying. And really considering the reality which appears too, because he talks about realities. For example, doubt, is it real? It's a reality. Kusala or akusala, citta or cetasika, see?
And there's difference in doubt as is generally used in terms of other knowledges, and doubt particularly to Buddha's teachings also, right?
Based on doubt about realities, and we use different concept. No doubt about realities.
I was just going to say, even though we can say we don't have any doubt about what we hear from the teachings, but there's still a lot of doubt about the realities, because
we
have not seen it, so there's understanding or acceptance at an intellectual level.
A visible object.
Yes, see. Good example. Can you say a bit more about it?
It appears.
It does
and
appear.
The sanya takes or remembers different colors. Mm. This is one moment after the process of seeing, and then think about with different names and story. So it continues like this from one doorway to another doorway. Just know nothing about the true nature of reality and sanya, the akusala sanya, unwholesome sanya, marks and remembers with akusala, ignorance, and lobha and dosa all day.
So is it just a matter of visible object being known as something that appears through that doorway as opposed to other doorway?
There is no limited point to start, but whenever awareness arises, Panya knows that it's different from moment when there is no awareness. That is the beginning.
But that difference between the moment with and moment without awareness can be, the difference can be so subtle.
There is right understanding of the difference.
Sometimes when one's been, say, talking about this, and afterwards one realizes, well, there was a difference of
that
some
is later
kind.
Thinking.
Later thinking.
Yeah. So it's not that very moment.
Exactly.
There is the understanding that whenever reality appears and awareness is aware, it's there already. Mm. So Panya begins to develop, understand, little by little.
It's a pity you can't rewind back to the...
No. I again, the self again.
Yeah.
Just let go. No more.
In the beginning, not only is the sati so weak and the difference so little, but any recognition of the difference is also slow in coming, so that all these factors together conspire to mean that there's...
Yeah, and there are many tests too.
like
Samma. Oh, please.
Attachment, wrong view, and all these things.
Usually they seeing just these visible objects, because to say anything else immediately suggests an idea of something like shapes or forms or whatever, which Sanya later marks. Do you think it's misleading to say seeing sees colors?
I don't know what word is the best word, but whatever appears, seeing sees it.
Right.
Well, it includes color, doesn't it?
Do we have to say color? Do we have to say visible object? Do we have to say any word?
I find it's better just to say seeing sees what it sees or what appears or visible object, okay, but sometimes when color is used, like people say see color, then I think it can be misleading, because then people have an idea of seeing a blanket of blue or a blanket of yellow, or so I think it can lead to
color misunderstanding. Color is also seen too. Color is seen too.
Well, it's like if you say seeing sees patterns or shapes, so it can be confused.
On what's in your mind, because now can seeing not be seen?
But is seeing focused? I mean, when we say we see the Buddha, and that's kusala vipaka, we're not talking about the background, we're just talking about his appearance.
We just talk about whatever we can give example for what is the pleasant object and what is not the pleasant object, that's all. But it doesn't mean that all the time.
I don't understand.
Some might think that looking at the Buddha image, and the Buddha image is ittaramana, pleasant object. But actually, it's not that, because nobody can tell. Mm-hmm. But at the moment of people in the Buddha's time mm-hmm. saw him, the Buddha's rupa is conditioned by wholesome karma.
So I'm talking
as
about
much
that.
As can say is that his rupa was pleasant object.
Yes, and now, say we see the Buddha and
Buddha image, or
real Buddha.
Now,
suppose, imagine. okay, for those people during his time when they saw the Buddha. But surely he wasn't standing in front of a beautiful background all the time. So I believe they saw the Buddha, let's say not even thinking in terms of shapes and form, but surely it must be focused on just the image of the Buddha to qualify it as kusala vipaka.
The Buddha image is always a pleasant object. Mm. Some is not at all.
No, I'm talking about the real Buddha. The real Buddha.
Again.
So it's because seeing just sees what it sees. One couldn't even say, like, let's say the real Buddha walks and sits here. You couldn't even say it each moment about the vipaka, because even though the rupas are pleasant object, who knows about what is experienced by vipaka at any moment.
But the rupa is there. But the particular rupa is there. The Buddha is there. And it is kusala.
It depends on conditions, what is like this Dharma book. We can all look at this page, but it depends on the vipaka, what is seen at any moment, at any time. We can't say looking here must be kusala vipaka, or this might be a pornographic magazine. I mean, one could look at it, it may be kusala vipaka, who knows. I mean, it's
but seeing the Buddha is kusala vipaka all the time, even though it's mixed with kusala or akusala. But I'm talking about the moment of vipaka. No matter what, seeing the real Buddha is kusala vipaka. No, I'm saying
Deva.
Is seeing focused.
Deva. What about Deva?
Like Robert often brings up the example of seeing a jewel or diamond or something, and that's beautiful against whatever background. So that moment of seeing the diamond before the recognition, before taking it the signs and the particulars is kusala vipaka, but still it's so it has to be focused on that and disregard the background. No?
Can one say with any, this is actually what we were saying yesterday, and there's been some discussion because I don't think it's correct. I think that like in examples of feeling the cold air conditioning or eating a particular kind of food or seeing the Buddha, even though those rupas, one could say, are desirable, undesirable rupas conditioned by karma, one can't see at any moment of seeing that it must be kusala or akusala vipaka.
I think that it's better to talk in terms of absolute reality. Otherwise, it's endless whether this is the pleasant or unpleasant object, which nobody can tell except Buddha himself. Because the rupa arises and falls away so fast. So who can know that, whether it's pleasant or unpleasant? But since there are two kinds of vipaka, kusala vipaka experiences the pleasant object, and akusala vipaka experiences unpleasant object, that's all we can know.
We do tend to generalize. We say, oh, okay, seeing the Buddha is kusala vipaka, or hearing someone's angry words is akusala vipaka, but in truth we never know at any moment what vipaka there is. So is there any point in even saying, like someone may come in and shout angrily, but different moments of kusala, kusala vipaka all the time following each other, no way of knowing at any moment. Is there any point in even saying that hearing angry words must be akusala vipaka?
For example, the citta which sees this is kusala vipaka or akusala vipaka. Who can tell?
I mean, I'm not concerned about that. I'm thinking more about, because in the discussions there's talk about concepts of thoughts being real or unreal as arising or not arising. I'm thinking that in terms of when we perceive, my explanation is that it's just sanya, vitaka, vichara, and it's not like a frame coming as they think. I'm trying to explain to myself how it happens in with regard to seeing an visible object, what the process takes place. If indeed we do see something, focused, the seeing is focused on something, and as against a background, then it seems that it takes the whole of that thing at a time.
So it says, for example, if samatha exceeds vipassana, there would be laziness. This is from a commentary to a sutta. If vipassana exceeds samatha, there'd be distracted. So it's a bit like the same question Oi and I have earlier. How can one talk about, like, if samatha exceeds vipassana, there would be laziness? What does this mean exactly?
I think that it indicates that when it's not the moment of awareness, it's like this. But when it's balanced, it conditions the moment of being aware and developing understanding.
So in that case, it's not just balanced at vipassana jnana, at any moment of awareness that they are balanced. And again, if samatha exceeds vipassana, there would be laziness. So would samatha in that case be wrong concentration?
I think that when there is no awareness, it's the unbalanced. And who tries to make it balance?
And here it also talks about samatha and vipassana being coupled at the moment of magga citta. So being coupled and being balanced is at the same time.
Balance or couple.
Couple the same. Yeah. So here it talks about them being coupled at the moment of magga citta, but you were saying that they are coupled or balanced at each moment of awareness.
Yes, because you see that there are many levels of satipatthana and panya. When there is awareness right now, it depends on how much panya has been developed to really understand reality as it is. When it's only the beginning, it's not like that when it has developed so long. So when it's vipassana jnana, as I said, that the samatha and vipassana appear together, this is the meaning of couple. or it shows its characteristic, like at that moment, samadhi or samatha at that level hasn't happened before. Because when it's the ordinary moment of developing satipatthana, it doesn't happen like when it's vipassanayana. So samatha at that level hasn't happened yet until it's vipassanayana. That samatha at that level, like concentration or samadhi and panya, are coupled because both are the same level of understanding and the strength of samadhi or samatha.
When you say they both appear together, do you mean they both arise together? Or?
They arise all the time together, but when they appear in vipassanayana, it's like couple. They cannot be separated because the characteristic of concentration or samatha, as we call it, and vipassana are there equally.
But they still have their own distinct characteristics.
Right, because samatha cannot be vipassana. But its characteristic then, it has happened before.
So this idea of balancing is just a bit of a red herring, really? Or perhaps it is relevant only to those with more or less highly developed awareness and understanding, because at this level it seems that one doesn't need to have any concern about lack of balance. It's just a question of even the little bit of awareness of
there
reality.
Is more understanding of realities. We can ignore the balancing, because otherwise there would be the idea that I will make it balanced.
Could one describe all the teachings as just a description of realities?
Without reality, there's no teachings.
Right. So, for example, if we read about these factors not being balanced, now it's just a description of just the way they are, and if we read about later how they are balanced, it's just a fact, not
always
a,
just a about the way they are.
Sometimes people on our discussion list, they have an idea that maybe it would be more useful for their practice or development if they were to give up jobs or live on their own or live in Buddhist communities or have more time or something like this. Would you like to just say a few comments?
Instead of doing or thinking like that, what about developing more understanding by reading, considering, discussing?
Reading, considering, discussing. But if your daily life is an extremely busy, exhausting job that
conditions. No selection. But there can be the development of understanding anywhere, even in the secluded place, without understanding what can develop.
I mean, I think the point is you cannot have understanding if you want to. If you try to, if you want to change things.
But you can create better conditions for understanding.
Yay, John!
Can we choose that?
I'm just taking the other side.
I'm disappointed.
Being the devil's advocate.
Is this place crowded?
This place crowded?
Is it crowded?
Yes, crowded.
Crowded?
Crowded.
When there is no awareness. Yeah. But when there is awareness, nobody in here. No one. And that is meant by viveka, living alone.
But you have to make a bit of room for the awareness first.
Less visible object.
No room.
I think Christine has more to add.
I'm feeling ganged up on here.
In the end, it's just a reminder for this present moment. And that can be anywhere.
That's true. But we're told in the scriptures that some of the things we can do is hear the true Dharma, reflect on the true Dharma. But, and I know I'm talking of a self again, if your daily life is just so busy and exhausting, and by the time you get home, your physical body and your mind is just so exhausted that the times when you can read the Dharma or discuss it on the internet with people, often it just doesn't happen. And if it were possible, I mean, don't forget I see a Buddhist once every 3 months where I live. I don't bump into them accidentally everywhere every day. So,
ESG is the best place to be.
Yeah. Exactly. But you can get home from work and you are just exhausted and you've got all the things to do, and part of you thinks, if only I could live with like-minded people, only I could manage.
And that's adding to the noise.
It is. It is. It is. But it is really difficult to be unsupported. And that's when you can consider a change in lifestyle. It's difficult.
It's whispering.
Sometimes it's just not a matter of choice, right? Lots of ways to do it. Like in U.S., we don't have time in the evening or at night because we're exhausted from work. So we listen to that when we get up in the morning, okay? Or we can just listen to that, listen to the tape while we're driving to work. It's so many different ways. It's just a matter of how you're going to do it. Just not there. It's just conditioned for you not to have it. But I think eventually you find a way. It will happen.
But is it more wholesome just to stay where you are and ignore Loba? Or is it...
No delay.
I have a slow response
time. Otherwise it's like excuses. How do you ignore Loba? I like to know that. How do you ignore Loba?
I don't know, actually. You've got to realise it's there.
Ever there's the thinking about place, thinking about time, thinking about surroundings.
I wonder if the Dhamma isn't available at any moment, wherever we are, even amidst the chaos and the confusion, isn't there that place? I think it's been described as the center of the hurricane, where the teaching is and where we can reside as all this madness goes on.
All of these depend on understanding. So develop understanding and you don't have to think much about place and time and situation.
We are lucky to have the Dhamma. I mean, those complaints and excuses are for people who don't have it.
Thank you, Sukhin.
I think, like you say, it's always Loba whispering, because it's when there's an idea of another time, another place, another object, it's just the Loba whispering again in so many different ways.
It's interesting working in counselling. One of the biggest things I see is the old geographical escape. People move in Australia from Victoria up to Queensland because then they'll be happy. And yet here I am thinking of the same.
But maybe there's a case for tweaking our present lifestyle so that we create a few more little oases in the middle of the day or when we get home or things like that. Does right livelihood depend on the kind of job one...
Depend on citta at that very moment. Depend on citta at that very moment, which abstain from the evil things.
Can a butcher enjoy moments of right livelihood?
What do you mean?
Well, we have a lot of discussion on the list because people are used to thinking when they read the suttas, for example, they read in the suttas about certain kinds of livelihood that are not encouraged, such as those involved with... So we know that actually it's only moments that are moments of right livelihood. So why bother to even mention? Is it just to say that at those particular moments that they are unwholesome?
Understand citta at that very moment. That's the best.
grateful for the poison just at the moment of laying the poison that
I don't think too much. Buddha taught about everything the way it is. So it's the understanding at that very moment whether there is clinging, wanting, wishing to have such place or not.
So can we say that there would be better conditions if there were?
It could be done with understanding or be done with desire for more awareness or anything. Doing it is one thing and thinking about it or wishing for it could be another. So if we thought that, okay, if I make more space in my life for Dhamma reading, there'll be more understanding. That
would be a problem.
Not necessarily follow. But then everyone can make more space in their life, a few minutes, if that's their priority. I mean, you can't say that no one can find a few minutes here and there for more listening or reading. So if they understand the benefit of it, then they could do so if they wanted to. But without changing their job or doing anything drastic.
How can there be the understanding of the Pagatupanisiyapajya, the decisive support? No matter what things does, it depends on the Pagatupanisiyapajya. So it's not the self. When there is the understanding whether one changes the job or go to the other place, because even doing so, it's by Pagatupanisiyapajya. So if there is the understanding, that's enough. And that's the best thing, because one doesn't go wrong with Panya.
Pagatupanisiyapajya is such a wide condition and actually includes all other conditions, including root and aramana and everything else. Why don't we just talk about one condition, Pagatupanisiya, if everything else is included in it?
Because
anyway,
by way of Pagatupanisiyapajya is not by way of hetu. It's not by way of kamma pajya or vipaka pajya. It's only by way of Pagatupanisiya.
You were saying that even hetu or everything, even concepts, everything can be included in Pagatupanisiya.
When they talk about hetu, there are six hetus. They are also Pagatupanisiyapajya. By way of Pagatupanisiya is by way of decisive support, but by way of being the root, it's not by way of Pagatupanisiya. Whenever it arises, it conditions citta at that moment to be lopa or dosa, because lopa arises as root. But how can lopa arises then by way of Pagatupanisiyapajya? Why not dosa? See?
So, for example, lobha now can only arise because there is the root and there also is the Pagatupanisiyapajya conditioning it and others. But when you are saying that even root is included in Pagatupanisiya.
Sikas, Pagatupanisiya, but not all jetasikas are roots.
Roots, right.
And they are in darkness, very complicated. Very, very complicated.
So this is why also, because of Pagatupanisiyapajya, we could all move house tomorrow, or we could all go and be in a prison cell, but who has any idea what cittas will arise or what realities there will be because of Pagatupanisiya going back for so many aeons? We have no idea what will happen in that circumstance or situation, or whether there'll be more sati or less sati. We may think going to Burma, oh, it's a condition for more sati, but who has any idea?
Yeah, we had a discussion a little while ago, which was about the Vesantara Jataka, where there were differing opinions about the way the Bodhisattva acted towards his wife and children by giving them away. It's very hard for me to accept that because I work with women who are victims of domestic violence. People were saying, quite rightly, that first of all, that one child and the wife had agreed for this to happen. Also that basically it was necessary for him to develop fully the parami of generosity, and that we've all benefited, and endless people have benefited from it. But I still have a feeling of almost horror, actually, that someone, there must have been a better way. There must have been another way. It's one of the, I find great difficulty accepting that.
If you were the Bodhisattva's children or child, what would you think?
I don't know, but I think that's a new... Well, that they were tied up, they were being hit, they were crying, they escaped a couple of times trying to get back to him, and he gave them away again.
And help someone to attain enlightenment, even you would be beaten, would you?
If I knew, but did they know?
Just to find a way, see, if you knew that someone's going to be enlightened, but by beating you.
Well, that would be all right.
See?
That notion has been used within Christianity, that the parents know what is best for the children, therefore they have the right to beat the children because they will be helping the children. However, we have in Canada come to see this as wrong view, that even if the parents are able to help the children, that the way to do it is not to beat them.
Question to you, like the question I asked Kun Christine, what would you think, what would you do if someone could be enlightened by someone beating you? Would you agree to be beaten so that that person would become enlightened?
What I'm struggling with is that I cannot see that as a way to enlightenment.
Our Dana, great Dana, can one give away the idea of self?
That was the word I was just working with.
Generosity.
And in terms of the treasures, I just have difficulty conceptualizing to beat someone as generosity.
This is the question, whether if you can help someone to become enlightened, would you like to help by any means or ways?
At this point in time, I'd just like to be more enlightened.
I'm just asking you the question, would you do it?
I rather doubt it. I don't think I'm there yet. No, 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 I don't think so.
Are you saying that the children and wife knew?
The Bodhisattva told him.
Oh, he did?
He told his children.
Ajahn, is it necessary for the Bodhisattva to reach that level or to be of that nature to be able to let go of even his wife and children, even and the fact that they're being hurt as well, and to be able to let go?
To give away wife and children, it's not as difficult as giving away the idea of self.